welcome to the 60th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. The podcast has been going on for well over a year now, and I'm happy to bring you all the information I can on how to become plant-based, the merits of becoming plant-based, and any little tidbits of endurance athletics that I could share with you. As far as athletics go, I have a half iron distance triathlon in a week. I thought it was going to be 2 weeks, which would have been better. I'm coming back from an ankle tendonitis, so we'll see what happens. I've been doing some biking. I haven't been swimming because that irritated my ankle. And I just have my run up to 6 miles, so it should be an interesting training day at best. So it snuck up on me quicker than I thought. It's the HITS Naples half distance. So it's a really good event in Naples, Florida. We've had unusually warm weather here in on the west coast of Florida. I'm not sure if it'll even be a wetsuit legal event. My only time in the ocean in the last couple weeks has been to the dog beach with my daughter and her dog and my dog Samantha. So, and the water wasn't very cold then, so we were in with just our bathing suits on, up to our knees only, so there was no swimming involved. But nevertheless, it wasn't too cold, so I think I could do a little over a mile without a wetsuit if need be. So that's pretty cool. I hope you all had a good Christmas if you celebrated, and happy Hanukkah if you celebrate that, or happy Kwanzaa, or whatever it is you happen to celebrate these holiday times of the year. We had a great gathering and a vegan Christmas Eve dinner, and everybody enjoyed. We always have the cook-off with my mother making stuffed shells and myself making stuffed shells. We do it just a little differently. Mine is a straight tofu spinach base with some spices, allspice, garlic, pepper. And she does sneak a little vegan cream cheese into her spinach. And it makes hers that way, and some so they're a little different, but they're equally good and tasty. And so I like hers; she likes mine, and we share with everybody else that comes over. We also had a green bean and garbanzo bean cold salad dish. There was cranberry sauce that she made fresh, or I guess should be cranberries made fresh, and we had some vegan cookies. My daughter made a vegan chocolate cake. We had a big vegetable tray, one shaped like Santa, one shaped like a wreath. Made the vegetable dip with tofu, dill, and lemon, so it was more of a, and cucumber, so it was a cucumber dill type dressing. We always have a pumpernickel loaf with a spinach dip, which was made again with some tofu and a little vegan sour cream, and spinach and some carrots. I did stuffed mushrooms, and they were stuffed with, again, a little tofu, a little spinach, breadcrumb, and a couple other different spices. By the time we made all that on the day, on Christmas Eve, before people got there, so I was in the stuffing food processing mode. I'm not sure what went into what, but it all tasted good, so it all worked out well. And then we do a relish tray. So there was plenty of food to eat that night. And the next day, so we Christmas Day for us is just kind of a lazy day, eating leftovers, opening presents, and just enjoying the quiet. We did go up to the dog beach, though, and it was amazingly crowded. We didn't think anybody would be up there in the afternoon, but it was a ton of people and their dogs, and it's always entertaining. You know, you go to the beach, usually people sit around the towels, and they don't talk to each other, but when you go to the dog beach, everybody is interacting, you know, petting everybody else's dog, keeping everybody. And the dogs are well behaved because they get to run and they're happy and, you know, chasing each other's balls and checking each other out. And my dogs tend to like, my big dogs tend to like little dogs, so it's kind of funny. But so people are interactive and very friendly. You know, usually you go to the beach, nobody talks to you, but this beach, everybody talks. So it's quite a good time. And the dogs pass out in the car on the way back and are ready for their bath when they get back to get desanded, and everybody had a good day. Before we get started with today's feature interview, which I'll give you the heads up, is Dr. Michael Greger. Of course, as you already know, before you downloaded this, you saw the title, but I was very excited to finally get him on my podcast. He's featuring a discussion on his book, How Not to Die. Anybody that's heard him speak on his nutrition.org website knows that he's a very dynamic and funny speaker and brings some humor and brings some humor to his scientific videos. So I really, really did enjoy speaking with him and learned a few things. And I've read his book cover to cover. It's a big, thick book. It has the first section is basically how food relates to the top killers or top diseases that kill people. And the second half is related to what he would recommend as red, green, and yellow light foods. You know, green light being greens, and which provides the most nutrients and benefits. So it's a very, very good read. It's full of scientific citations. I don't know how many pages of scientific citations that go along with each chapter so that you can actually pull up the literature if you want to look. And again, if you have never checked out his website, nutritionfacts.org, it's a wonderful resource. It's all nonprofit. But he reviews all the scientific nutritional literature and puts little videos up every week. He also has a newsletter that comes out. So it's a great way to learn about whole food plant-based nutrition on a weekly basis in small doses. So I'd encourage anybody that's starting your plant-based journey or having any questions, and if you want to even look up some controversial things as far as what to eat, it's a really good resource and a good starting point to do some more research. So that interview will be up in here in just a little bit. I first want to plug my first annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Nutrition Conference. It will be January 23rd. Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn and his wife will speak. Dustin Rudolph from Empty Medicine Cabinet, the book, will speak. Evelise Capo, who is a PharmD as well as Dustin, will also do a cooking demonstration. She is a wonderful plant-based educator through both the CHIP program and PCRM, and she has her own program as well in Sarasota. She also does Latino translations of ethnic, so her, she's Puerto Rican, so she does a lot of her foods into whole food plant-based versions, as well as other Spanish food, as well as traditional cuisine. So she's a wonderful cook. Her whole family's vegan. She's a wonderful speaker. They're a wonderful family, so enjoy that demonstration. I'll also be giving a talk on some of the pitfalls and ways to overcome or become plant-based, as well as talk a little bit about the gut microbe and how it contributes to inflammation and how whole foods plant-based diet can help that. So it'll be a great day. It's held at the Punta Gorda, it's called the Isles Yacht Club of Punta Gorda, here in Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, Florida. Tickets can be purchased at eventbrite.com. And, you know, look forward to seeing you. The price is $148. And again, you get breakfast and lunch and a full day of lectures. It's from 8 to 4:30. There'll also be a panel discussion, an opportunity to have your book signed, and an opportunity to ask questions of all the speakers. So please do join us. I look forward to seeing you there. Interestingly enough, with the advertisement of this program and the nutrition course that I offer in the office is starting to get around locally, and I've actually had a couple physicians approach me in the last couple of weeks about plant-based nutrition, which is completely new, and they're very interested in learning. One physician had a scare himself. He's a radiologist and saw some calcification in his own arteries and was inquiring how might nutrition help to reverse his possible vascular disease. Another physician, also a young guy with high blood pressure on blood pressure medications, he was also inquiring, you know, how to get more healthy, and he's trying to transition his diet, and he's trying to learn about plant-based nutrition, and he wants to promote that in his office. as opposed to traditional medications, because no matter what the specialty of the physician, doctors are starting to realize that they're really not helping people get well. They're more keeping them alive and just kind of patching them up as they continue to decline, sort of picking up the pieces, if you will. And this is a great opportunity to make people healthy and to help them get off their medications. And we all want to be successful and the hero to our patients, save the day, so to speak. I think most physicians went to medical school to be able to help and really make a difference in people's lives. And this is such an easy way to do it. You just have to learn about it and get educated. And it wasn't provided in medical school, but there's certainly a lot of opportunities out there to learn and then to spread this knowledge. You know, we always tell people in our office, there's no better parts than the original equipment. And that means your hips or your heart or your kidneys or your eyes. So it's very important that we take care of the original equipment. And it can last a long time, just like a very high expensive car that people really take good care of, or one that they just drive in the snow and the rain and they don't ever wash it or take care of it. The same thing happens. But the original equipment in the human body is, you know, the most precious thing that we have. And it's so important to take care of it, and providing nutrients is the basis for taking care of your body. So, you know, again, if we can just get that disconnect between food as nutrition and food as health, as opposed to food as being something that we enjoy the taste of or quantity of just for short periods of time. So that disconnect needs to change over time. And I think we slowly are getting that word across, but it's not without a lot of competitions from, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken and some of these other big joints that really throw a wrench into things. I remember when I was in medical school and just started a first-year med student, one thing that always confused me was, how does cancer kill you? The concept of having a tumor or a mass obviously was understood, but how did that mass actually cause you to, your heart to stop and you to stop breathing and you to die? And it was very difficult for me to understand that process. You know, certainly I witnessed people coming to the end, and the whole process seemed to be somewhat confusing to me. But you know, I come to realize that these tumors are essentially poisons that are throughout our body, and even though the poison or the tumor can be removed, scooped out, taken out, resected out, the poison is still in the body and continues to affect other organs and continues to grow. And it becomes so much more clear now that nutrition is such a way to halt that, because it's like bringing in another army of soldiers to fight that process that's spreading through your body. So if you get a lot of nutrients through your diet and you take the offending cancer stimulating things away, such as smoking and animal protein and animal fat, and excessive processed foods, then your body can actually heal itself. And it all kind of starts to make sense. So, you know, I would encourage you to think that way, that, you know, we all have these bad poisons and there are all these roadblocks to health, but providing a good nutrition is like having an army of defense that can keep all these bad things away. You know, my dad used to always say, you are what you eat. And unfortunately, most of us are, and it's becoming what we eat is what's really hurting us in the end. I had a patient's family come in to see me last week, and the patient was actually in his 90s, and he has vascular disease and kidney disease and carotid disease, and he'd actually had a couple of mini strokes in the last couple of weeks. And his son wanted to know, and he brought in literature on carotid artery stenting, because he knew that his dad was 91 and that surgery might be difficult, but the stent could be put in, and there was literature that the blockage could be, plaque could be sucked out, and that it was relatively safe. But what he didn't realize was that that procedure carried risk, such as having that plaque go downstream and cause a stroke right then and there, and the contrast and the radiation needed could be harmful to his dad and actually shorten his dad's lifespan significantly, and or the quality of his life significantly. And I kept saying, well, you know, dietary modification can still help. Even at 91, you can get some benefits and settle some of these plaques down. And he kept bringing up, yes, but we've eaten meat for years. I know our humans have been eating meat all this time, and there's never been a problem. And it's like, well, you know, we've lived there, you know, he lived to be 91 years old, and his dad lived to be 96 years old. You know, and I tried to, you know, explain to him that this, you know, that the science of a whole food plant-based diet is there as far as reversal, and no other way of eating it shown reversal of disease. And Dr. Greger's going to bring up a good point in the upcoming lecture that, you know, when cavemen ate meat, and early on when people ate meat in animal protein, when they could get it, not near the amount that's eaten today, it was a source of calories for survival. So they were trying to survive. And it's kind of funny. So they needed it to reproduce. But once you've reproduced, then there's nothing that excessive calories is going to help you with except to cause increased adipose and increased disease and increased toxicity. So it's kind of ironic that the caveman was trying to survive by eating calories, and now we're trying to survive, but we have to eliminate those very calories that may have those types of calories that they may have once eaten. So, you know, it's an interesting debate as far as, you know, why people live to be 91 years old eating a bad diet versus die at 40 eating a bad diet. So certainly there's some genetics that go along with it. But by and far, people don't live healthy into their 90s and not have problems and multiple surgeries and multiple procedures on a standard American diet. So without going into details much further, I'm going to let Dr. Greger talk about all this, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy this lecture. So sit back, listen, and enjoy. So welcome, Dr. Michael Greger. I first came in contact with Dr. Greger through he's the founder of nutritionfacts.org, which is a wonderful reference site for all things nutrition and review of the literature. He does little video blurbs on a weekly basis, and now we have the pleasure of having them all in a book named How Not to Die. So welcome, Dr. Greger.
Thank you so much. So glad to be here.
So, you know, the book to me is fabulous. It's, you know, it's like all your little videos rolled into one in the first part. And I can, you know, and the references are fantastic. And so you can kind of have your hands on all of them at the same time. So, and it's not too over the top scientific. So it's not reading a scientific textbook that's going to put you to sleep. It has your humor. So anybody that's heard you speak, it's very entertaining. Mm-hmm.
Great. Yeah. I really wanted it to be more than just a reference book. You know, I got, nutritionfacts.org, got more than 1,000 videos, you know, which is great, but, you know, I get to cover so many topics. It's a little overwhelming. I do record these kind of annual year in review videos going through the science in about 12-month chunks, but I really want to compile the most compelling evidence all in one place. And so that's really, yeah, the first half of the book. You know, our chapters on the role of diet may play in preventing, arresting, reversing each of our 15 leading causes of death. But I also wanted to be really on a practical guide and kind of translating this mountain of data into day-to-day decisions. So that's what kind of became the second half of the book, where I centered my recommendations around a kind of a daily dozen checklist of all the things I try to fit in for my daily routine.
So, and you're doing a tremendous amount of speaking now, and you're speaking in some medical schools as well. What kind of interest interest are you generating there, as you know, as well as, you know, how is that being incorporated in some of the medical schools and residency programs? I mean, now what, you know, it's like, instead of providing blood pressure medicines, or you think people are actually going to start teaching this in medical school to more nutrition?
Well, I mean, the students love it. I mean, if you try to think back, well, we were both medical students. I mean, you just go to med school so idealistic and excited about the field. And, you know, the students just eat it up. This is in their first two preclinical years when they actually get to go to lectures and stuff before they're on the wards. Unfortunately, out of those thousands of hours of preclinical instruction, very little of it is nutrition, maybe just a few hours. You know, this is, you know, we all went to medicine because we wanted to help people, and here's a tool that offers us to do just that. I mean, you know, practicing medicine these days can be very frustrating. About 85% of primary care is chronic disease, which is, you know, frustrating for doctor and patient to manage in terms of just trying to, you know, slow down one's progressive decline in diabetes or heart disease, or, you know, trying to kind of mediate the consequences. But you know, these lifestyle changes, when you actually treat the cause of the disease and are able to reverse some of the damage done and have their bodies kind of come back to health, now that's really exciting. I mean, that's what we all did this for. Unfortunately, today, with just pills and procedures, we often don't make people much better.
No, and, you know, you know, we talk about lifestyle diseases, and people might catch on to maybe high blood pressure is a lifestyle disease, or maybe high cholesterol. But, you know, you took your book, and especially in the first half, and you listed basically the causes of death and hook nutrition and how nutrition helps that. So I think that's a big eye-opener to people that, you know, all these different things. I mean, you might say, okay, well, you can reverse high blood pressure, but, you know, the liver disease and, you know, cancers, I think that's, you know, really cool.
Well, I mean, I think even with, you know, blood pressure and cholesterol, I think, you know, many physicians even think that, you know, essential hypertension is just, you know, this high blood pressure as we age is just normal. It's like a natural, inevitable consequence of aging. Everyone's going to get high blood pressure. And so, you know, by age 60 or so. And so that's just kind of, you know, diet, lifestyle has nothing to do with it. Just what happens. And, you know, cholesterol. People think, oh, yeah, I got high cholesterol, runs in the family. It's genetics, nothing to do with, you know, what I really eat. And so even, you know, things that to us is just second nature, that of course these are lifestyle diseases, we could dramatically alter them very rapidly with, you know, healthy choices. But you're right. I mean, when I went into this, I mean, I just came into it similar to you, kind of from a heart disease standpoint, and was shocked to discover that the same diet, it's not like there's a one brain healthy diet and a heart healthy diet that's somehow different from a liver healthy diet or something. The same diet also was, you know, could cure metabolic disease like type 2 diabetes, reverse type 2 diabetes in the same way it would reverse, you know, atherosclerotic coronary artery disease. And, you know, I mean, and some of this work, so for example, you know, Dean Ornish's landmark work, Lifestyle Heart Trial, you know, published in The Lancet in 1990, proving you can open up arteries without drugs, without surgery. You know, his team was like, all right, well, we checked off killer number one of men and women in this country, let's move to killer number two, cancer. And so then they put people on the same diet and were able to show the reversal of the progression of prostate cancer, for example, with the same kind of diet. And so, I mean, this is really exciting stuff. And so I think the, I mean, this is really an optimistic message that we have tremendous power over our health, destiny, and longevity. The vast majority of premature death and disability is preventable with a plant-based diet and other healthy lifestyle behaviors.
I heard you speak at the plant-based nutrition talk in California, in the conference in California, and you had a couple of slides referring to the DASH diet and various other diets that American College of Cardiology and American Heart Associations have recommended, which are basically watered down at best. And your one comment was, you know, are we afraid to tell people the truth?
Right. I mean, they're very explicit. If you actually go back in the literature, so, you know, the current, you know, ACC/AHA guidelines, the official kind of cardiology guidelines is, you know, lifestyle first, when we can, and, you know, the dietary part of that lifestyle is this DASH diet, this dietary approach to stop hypertension. And this was created, way back in the, you know, started in the 70s. And so he's like, okay, well, what diet do they recommend? And it, you know, they recommend this kind of low meat diet. And they based it, but it's interesting to see the history. They go back and they're very explicit. The design committee, headed by, Dr. Frank Sachs at Harvard, very explicit that the designing of this diet was to capture the blood pressure lowering benefits of a vegetarian diet. But they say, include enough animal products to make it palatable to the general population. Now, you can see what they're thinking here. They're thinking, look, it doesn't matter how good the diet works. If nobody eats it, it's not going to matter, right? Just like drugs don't work at all unless you actually take them. Diets don't work at all unless you actually eat them. And so, this was, you know, decades ago. They're like, okay, no one is going to eat a strictly plant-based diet, even though their own research showed that that was the case. The only Western population with an ideal blood pressure down about, 110 or 65, were these strict vegetarians, and they found that, you know, adding dairy or meat to their diet made their blood pressure go up. But, you know, no one's going to eat that way. So what's the point of making those kind of guidelines? So they said, okay, well, how about this DASH diet? Well, yes, you can have a little meat, you can have a little dairy, you can, you know. In hopes that, look, on a population scale, they'd actually do more good in the long run for people if they kind of, you know, soft-pedaled the message. But the point I tried to make is tell that to the 1,000 American families a day that lose a family member to hypertension. It's about 400,000 deaths a year. I mean, so, you know, maybe it's time to start telling Americans the truth.
Yeah, I had a, it was interesting. Today I had in my office a 91-year-old man and his wife and his son, who's probably in his 40s, early 50s. And the dad had terrible carotid artery disease. I mean, he's 91 years old. He's, you know, doing pretty good, but he has a bunch of the boxes checked, so to speak. And the son kept arguing with me, well, we've eaten meat for years as humans, so why do we, you know, why do you have to eliminate those? Are you sure that's causing the problem? And, but he was more than willing to subject his father to a potential carotid endarterectomy, you know, if need be. Or a stent, and it's like, well, you know, this would really be a lot better at this stage than, you know, some invasive procedure that we know has significant risk, and we don't even know how bad the risk is at 91.
I mean, you could counter say, look, we haven't had carotid endarterectomies for millions of years. So why would you think it would be good now? Well, it's because we have science now. We can actually see. I mean, in the past, I mean, we really, you know, evolved in a context of famine. It was all about just getting enough calories to live to reproductive age and passing on our genes. And in that case, I mean, the most calorically dense food is the best way to do it. And so that's brains and bone marrow and whatever's going to get you there. If you airdrop some time machine Twinkies back then, and that would have been a huge boon to human civilization because it would just give them enough calories to make it to reproductive age. Does that mean Twinkies are good for you? No. But that's the kind of – so just because we ate meat or didn't wear shoes or whatever you want to say, it's kind of called a naturalistic fallacy. And just because it is doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. Now we have something called the scientific method, and we can actually put things to the test, and we can realize, oh, these populations get disease, these populations don't. Hey, let's take people with disease, put them on the kind of diet of the populations that don't get disease, see what happens. Can we slow down disease? Not only can we slow it down and stop it, we can reverse disease. open up arteries, you know, without the drugs, without surgery, without stents. And so it's like, well, look, there it is right in front of you, this controlled clinical trial, the only diet ever shown to reverse heart disease in the majority of patients. And so, you know, shouldn't that be the default diet to proven otherwise? And the fact that it can also, you know, stop or reverse other leading killers like the hypertension, type 2 diabetes, would just seem to make the case overwhelming. So we have the science proving that it works. And so it doesn't matter what caveman did or did not eat. Here's the science to prove what works.
Very good. I should have had this interview a few hours earlier, perhaps. I do have a prescription pad that I give out, and it basically has nutritionfacts.org on there, preventing reverse heart disease, wonderful. China study, and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, I sent him away with that, and says, finally, after a while, it's like, you know, again, I did say it's the only diet that's been proven, and please just go look at these references, and, you know, you need to go on.
Good. Right.
You know, I also like the part of the book, you know, you know, eat a whole food plant-based diet. I love your little recipes that you have in that are kind of quick little blurbs as opposed to, you know, 13 pages of ingredients.
Right.
Your pumpkin custard was a hit at my nutrition class, by the way, so thank you.
Oh, fun! Fun,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that was really good and very timely. And I also like, so the little coenzyme Q10, ubiquinol, you know, I thought that was a really neat. So you have vitamin D and you have chlorophyll and you can aquadize your ubiquinone to ubiquinol and it works.
It's the craziest thing. In fact, I have a video coming up in this next DVD. It'll be out on the website in the next few months. We're actually, you know, go through all those papers, but I just could not wait. I just had to get it into the book. So it just it suggests that there's benefits to sunlight beyond the vitamin D. I mean, that's kind of, you know, sunshine vitamins, you know, why we should get sun. And there's also potential benefits for mood with people with seasonal affective disorder or institutionalized elderly. You know, that's kind of it, or that's what we thought. And then this crazy story comes along where the near-infrared rays from sunlight actually penetrate through your body, through your skin. You can actually, there's enough light inside your skull, you could read a book in there. As any kid can tell you, shined a, you know, flashlight through their fingers, this near-infrared goes through our body and can actually interact with chlorophyll in our bloodstream. Of course, that only works for eating dark green leafy vegetables. We're actually eating our greens. Can actually interact with chlorophyll in our bloodstream and regenerate this coenzyme Q10 a problem for people taking these statin cholesterol-lowering drugs, the same enzyme that's crippled by these drugs that makes cholesterol, the same one that helps the production of CoQ10, which is this kind of endogenous antioxidant, but it needs to be regenerated, and that can happen with a combination of eating greens and getting sunlight, which is just the wackiest. I don't know. I thought it was just a fascinating story. And now I'm actually just doing another series of videos. These won't go up until probably the middle of next year. That it turns out that sunlight exposure on the skin actually releases nitric oxide. You can actually do a kind of closed air chamber, and you see the nitric oxide actually emanating from the skin when you expose it to UV rays. You get a bump of kind of nitrate, compounds in the blood, and an acute drop in blood pressure just with sunlight exposure, which is really interesting. Of course, one has to balance that against skin cancer risk and photoaging and cataracts and other things, but it's going to be a fascinating series of videos. I encourage people to subscribe to the website. Everything's free, and I'll let everybody know when the new videos are out.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. I always recommend people ask, you know, what kind of exercise to do. And I always say go outside and take your walk if you can, you know, if you're living in a safe area. Because I think there's so much more benefit to getting outside as opposed to being inside on the treadmill if you have a chance.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah. Well, Yeah, I prefer. And to me, you know, it's I say there's something magical about seeing the sun come up and you know, getting some fresh air. It makes your day better. So.
Oh, good. That's good advice.
Good advice. So, and the other thing, okay, and so I guess comparing that to just taking a coenzyme Q10 tablet, is there anything compared to that? I mean, has it been shown to work at all if you don't do that? Is that an alternative or not really?
Oh, well, I mean, there's some CoQ10. There's some good data on CoQ10 supplementation for certain types of heart failure. But, I mean, we shouldn't need to take any CoQ10 supplement at all. Our body makes it. Our body can regenerate it naturally, but it just needs our help to do that. And ideally, we wouldn't take drugs that muck with our body's natural processes like that. And if one eats healthy enough, we should be able to, you know, live with a normal cholesterol, you know, LDL under 70, total cholesterol under 150. You know, I mean, the reason we have high cholesterol is not because we have suffered from drug deficiencies. It's because we're eating saturated fat, trans fats, and dietary cholesterol, which is all bumping our, you know, our bad cholesterol. And so, look, we can eliminate those or minimize those in our diet, and we can boost our intake of really healthy whole plant foods that have lots of fiber, which helps pull cholesterol out of the system, phytosterols, other beneficial plant compounds. And we should be able to lower our cholesterol naturally without having to go to statins. And so then, I mean, that's so much of modern medicine. It's, okay, you give a drug, and then you got to give another drug to counter the side effects of the first drug. All right, so that would be like giving CoQ10 to counteract the effects of statins. You know, better to stop that whole kind of medication treadmill, that polypharmacy, by trying to treat the cause in the first place.
And then the other thing that's somewhat frustrating is it seems like if there's something just a little bit better, like cranberry juice, then we have Ocean Spray cranberry juice cocktail, and we have, you know, cranberry roll-ups, and, you know, the same thing with... And you have your pink juice in there, which is pretty simple, a handful of cranberries and water and some erythritol that has much more power.
I mean, absolutely, because first, it's a whole food, and it doesn't have, you know, high fructose corn syrup. You know, the more, you know, I kind of have this kind of stoplight, you know, categorizing system, like the best foods, the green light foods. These are whole plant foods, and there's kind of yellow light foods, red light foods. And so, in general, we should try that. So the cranberries would be a green light food, a whole plant food, whereas cranberry juice would be, cranberry juice in general would be yellow light food, although, you know, you had a lot of high fructose corn syrup. You wonder if you wouldn't categorize that as kind of an ultra-processed food. But, ideally, you know, we want to eat the whole fruit because we're, you know, missing out on the fiber and some of the phytonutrients that are attached to that fiber. And so it's like, okay, there's benefits to cranberry juice. Well, why not we get it by eating cranberries? How do you eat cranberries? Well, you know, you find ways to do it. You can put some in that pumpkin custard you just made. You know, you can make, cranberry sauce. You can make my pink juice recipe. Just make sure to rinse your mouth out with water after drinking it, because the natural acids found in cranberries can hurt your enamel if they just sit on there for too long.
So, personally, I heard you speak at another. You pretty much refine your diet as your research goes along, but you're pretty much a basic kind of guy. Whole plant foods, close as they can, come from the ground type of diet.
Yeah, I really try to stay away from processed foods whenever I can. I mean, that's not always possible on the road. But, you know, in general, so, I mean, I think most people get it these days. You know, brown rice is healthier. White rice, whole wheat, healthier than, you know, refined wheat. But, you know, to go even a step further and talk about intact grains like oatmeal, where some non-flour products, so, you know, whole wheat flour, so even a whole grain bread where the first ingredient has the word whole in it, you know, so you're not refining out all those nutrients, still has all the fiber, but just when you process grains into powder, into flour, It can boost the glycemic index and have potentially negative metabolic effects. And so, this whole spectrum. Okay, look, yeah, whole wheat bread is a lot better than white bread. But even better would be to eat grains whole, like eating quinoa or oatmeal or wheat berries or, kind of on down the list. So even people, so the nice thing I think about this book is it's great for people who are just totally starting out and be like, oh my, I have no idea what to eat, how to make greens taste good, anything. And it's also good for people who are already on board with doing really well, but really just want to tweak it. So, all right, they got rid of all the stuff that's raising their blood pressure. They're controlling their sodium. Okay, well, did you know that you can, if your blood pressure is still too high, well, flax seeds. I mean, we got double-blind, placebo-controlled trials on flax seeds, hibiscus tea, and other things that can, particularly appear good at lowering blood pressure. In fact, sometimes better than drugs without the side effects. And so, I think for the whole spectrum, people can benefit. And I'm learning new stuff all the time. So just because there's new science all the time, there's about 70 articles published in the English language on nutrition every day in the medical literature, and I just got to try to keep up.
Yeah, I think it's good. And, for me, it's great because I can do a multi-pronged approach, so if this approach doesn't get it well, okay, like the salt and the cured meats and the salt component is probably associated with the gastric tumors and the toxicity of salt. So if I can't get them to stop it because of their blood pressure, if I bring up the cancer word a lot of times, that helps.
Oh, great. Hey, yeah, whatever works. Absolutely.
So that's got it, and of course, and then, I like the chicken reference with some of the blood cancers and the lymphomas, because it seems like chicken is a health food, at least around where I live. And so to get people off the chicken and, at least get them stop and think about it, this might not be so great. So it's great.
Anything I can do to help, I'm glad that it's useful for you.
So do you see patients as well? It sounds like this is a full-time job as far as all this literature.
Yeah. Now it's all writing, research, speaking. I had to give up my clinical practice years ago. Just couldn't fit it all in. I kind of missed the one-on-one, but now I feel like I'm, practicing medicine on a grander scale.
Yeah, I think so. And you're teaching all of us on a regular basis, so I thank you very much for that.
Sure.
So,
It wouldn't matter. I mean, it's the people in the trenches like you that are actually putting this to work. It wouldn't matter if I did all this all the time if no one's there actually putting it into practice, right? I mean, so we make a good team.
That does sound good. And again, I'm a cardiologist that now I'm doing nutrition classes and I'm cooking in class. And I can cook. I grew up with, an Irish grandmother and an Italian mom that are good cooks, but I don't have any Iron Chef skills. But your little recipes that I think if you can come up with these little recipes that you have that are really quick and simple for people, that makes them not afraid.
Oh, good.
So I do appreciate that. I won't take up any more of your time because I know you're just talking nonstop these days. Where will you be next if somebody wants to track you down and see you in person?
Oh, good question. They can go to, just go to nutritionfacts.org, scroll down on the left-hand side. It has all my upcoming talks. I'm going to be all over the country, in fact, 6 countries, about 50, 60 speaking days in the next couple of months. Hopefully I'll see you in person. If not, at least you can hear me. With the new videos and articles posted every day at nutritionfacts.org.
Well, I look forward to your upcoming videos, and thank you again for taking time to speak with me.
Keep up the great work.
All right, thank you. All right, good night.
Bye-bye.
Pretty cool. Now you know not how to die. And the idea is that we're all going to die, but how not to die being sick for the last 10 years of your life or continuing to decline or be debilitated. The idea is to be 91 years old and still doing triathlons or running or going out hiking or doing what you want, being in control of your own life and destiny. So I hope you all pick up that book, How Not to Die by Dr. Michael Greger, and start learning. It's a great reference book. It's still an easy read, even though there's a lot of science to it. So, you know, please enjoy. I just heard another lecture that was posted by him on Dr. McDougall's site, and they were talking about diabetes and this big controversy with, you know, low-carb diet. And if you go to a lot of diabetic nutritionists, they'll tell the people to watch their carbs. And, you know, carbohydrates, carbs are often very much confused with people. You know, certainly white sugar and white flour are carbohydrates, but so are all plants, which are extremely good for you. And so instead of emphasizing what you shouldn't have, you know, it needs to be what you should have: more fiber, more vegetables, more foods of color. But, you know, he also talked about this information is not new. In 1927, there was a study done where they gave people a high-fat diet, and they saw in 2 days a doubling of their insulin spike after eating. We know that if you infuse fat into someone's veins, like they do when people can't eat, they do fat emulsions, they developed insulin resistance in 2 days. And, you know, if you eat, and I have people do the experiment that don't believe me, have a Ritz cracker with some butter on it before you go to bed if you're a diabetic, and check your sugar in the morning. And then the next day, have an apple before you go to bed and check your sugar the next day in the morning. You'll see a big, or check it 2 hours later if you do it during the day, you'll see a big insulin spike. It's the fat that drives the insulin spike. And the way, and the reason why that occurs is that diabetes is really a disease of fat toxicity. When you eat excessive amounts of fat, it gets stored in your adipose. But after about age 20, your fat cells don't increase. They just expand when you overeat and deposit fat in them. Sooner or later, those fat cells actually spill the fat into the bloodstream. And when they do that, you see a rise in triglycerides on your blood test. But not only do they spill into the bloodstreams, it's then taken up by the muscles. And that's why the muscle can't use and can't get glucose in and can't use it, because it takes so much insulin to drive the glucose into the cells that have been damaged by fat rather than just being muscle. So the actual organelles of the muscle is being infiltrated by fat and doesn't work properly. That fat also diffuses into the liver, where we have fatty liver, and that causes more cirrhosis now in the United States than alcohol. It also infuses directly into the pancreas, causing things to be worse. So it's not the sugar that's coming in. It's not people that ate too much table sugar or too many whole grain products that cause diabetes. It is the fat. And when we take that away, the diabetes goes away. So, you know, you can do the experiment on yourself. If you eat a steak dinner, if you're pleased, I hope you're not doing this, but if you still eat meat and you eat meat for dinner, do your sugar 2 hours later, and then do a plant-based diet and do your sugar 2 hours later. I think you'll see a marked improvement. And the last thing I wanted to touch on is if you're having problems not achieving your cholesterol goals, some people are disappointed that they still have high cholesterols. You know, I think the biggest pitfalls are in when people become plant-based. It is a transition, and it is a difficult transition, especially people that have high cholesterol and disease. You know, they've been eating a high-fat diet for a long time, and their cells aren't healthy, and their livers aren't working right, so they don't process things like they should. But in addition to that, recipes that people often try to follow either have processed ingredients or oils or excessive, you know, oils in the form of oil, you know, either coconut or canola or olive oil. They may have fake mustard or fake mayonnaises or, you know, plant-based mayonnaises such as veganaise. They may have plant-based butters that are oils. In addition, you know, people tend to eat a lot of bread and pasta and that has butter, or that have some sort of oil sauce. And again, the pasta is milled, so it's a high calorie. And again, you're leading to more calories, more fat deposition, more insulin resistance, more fat in the blood. It drives cholesterol. The other thing is snacks in the diet, whether they be potato chips. I saw today when I went to Sam's They now have chips when they advertise they have olive oil in them. So I guess they're trying to make sure that people think that they're healthier and they're doing a better alternative, which you're not. You know, oil's oil as far as it is absorbed immediately. But desserts and cookies have oil in them if they're a lot of the times, even vegan baking recipes, when we did that over Christmas time, you know, they tend to have a lot of shortening or a lot of butter in them. So you have to pick ones that don't have that in them. You know, and then the recipes and processed foods that you get tend to have, you know, even a vegan bean burger that you purchase are going to have a lot of oils and things to hold them and chemicals that, you know, are going to lead to problems. So you have to watch things closely. And the easiest way is to get yourself to a whole foods diet as quick as possible and transition away from those extra ingredients or those processed foods. So keep up the good work. You know, 2016 should be a great one. I'm hoping to get something published in 2016. The podcast is rolling. We're going to have our first nutrition conference. So I can't wait for what lies ahead. I'm very optimistic about the future. My nutrition course is going well. We've done two at the same time now. If I could do it, you know, for a whole day and have, you know, have conferences and classes, that's what I would like to do. So hopefully I'll have enough interest in doing that. Encourage people to exercise, even to get into walks. You know, we sell the Vivio Fits and the Garmin's in the office, and it really is, they're really helpful devices to get people walking and counting their steps and compete with their friends and family. So if you don't have one, get one of those. You can order it from us. You can get it any place else that you want. But they're really a good device to motivate you. So I wish everybody a happy and healthy, plant-based, whole foods new year. And I hope all your dreams come true.